The third International Symposium on Applied Sciences in Biomedical and Communication Technologies came to a close in Rome on Wednesday. The conference aimed at creating a stage where researchers, scientists, and business people can discuss and share ideas at the frontiers of life sciences, pure sciences, and engineering. Professor Thomas Roszka of the Poznan P. Catholic University in Hungary is an electrical engineer and the co-inventor of the bionic eye. He spoke with Chris Altieri about the ethics of scientific endeavor in the 21st century.
Professor, why don't we jump in there, and you can tell us a little bit about your own current project. When I hear the word bionics, I think of a 1970s television show, and it doesn't really, I think, fit very well the status actualis.
Yeah, at that time, the bionic woman and the others in the television were kind of fictions, but today, bionics or bionic engineering is defined at the crossroads of the two high technologies, namely electronics and computing and the biotechnology. And maybe it's the easiest way to define this new industry by their products and services. Number one are the so-called laboratory on a chip. The tip of the iceberg is the gene chip. And it's really a dramatic change in the last 10 years that the cost of our own specific personal genetic code out of the 3 billion, 1 million, the cost of it went down in 10 years from $10,000 to $1. It means that this technology is following this bionic lab on a chip technology, is changing the world very soon as the technology in hospitals. Second, there are the different prosthetic devices. Again, an example in use since 15 years is the cochlear prosthetic device. That means a child born deaf will start hearing and speaking when he or she is 2 years old and will insert this prosthetic cochlear prosthesis. The challenge, will we have some prosthetic devices for the blinds? This is one direction I'm personally also working on that.
Well, I wanted to ask you, actually, because what you've just described with the cochlear prosthesis and also with the ocular prosthesis, these are both technologies, technological applications and developments of science, which go to the one of the basic tasks of medicine and of the ethical, within the ethical purview of scientific endeavor, that is to fix things that don't work properly, to make the body work as it should. But that's a qualitatively different endeavor from making, from the effort to make people better than they actually are, to improve the race. And yet the technologies involved, the applications, could be brought in the one direction or in the other. Now, how do you manage that tension?
You are mentioning some directions which are so fundamental that today, on the molecular level, we can really change, we can really influence the genetic codes of animals and, in principle, of humans as well. And this is the major question of stem cell business. Also, I want to mention that now it's clear that the adult stem cells technologies are not only clear as to the ethical issues are concerned, but also it turned out that it is more powerful and more promising in practice as well. But
yes,
the major question is, where are the borderline between experimenting with people like Mengele or curing people? And this borderline needs tremendous depth of analysis, because then our notion of man and our understanding of technology are both needed.
You were saying very interestingly just now that there are clear ethical delineations, but you were speaking of this in approvingly. A great many people in the world are very misinformed about the church's position on stem cell research. They think that the church is against it, when actually the church is very well, very much for stem cell research. But can you pick this up?
Absolutely. All over the world, stem cell research can be done in a way that has no ethical problems and also is a complete misunderstanding that the church is against stem cell research. Simply, the borderline is experimenting with human beings, including human embryos, or not. And the funny fact is that we don't need experimenting human embryos. That's the point. And I might refer also chapter 6 of Caritas in Veritate. It's a wonderful, very deep, scientifically very sound analysis of the challenge, of the moral challenges of these high technologies, including the biotechnologies, and information technologies. And I think the borderline, again, should be kept intact. Namely, don't experiment with human beings. The problem is that in some cases, it's very difficult to understand what's going on. Even in case of the retinal prosthetic devices or helping the blinds, there are a lot of misconceptions, misrepresentation, and I think one important responsibility of the researchers is to tell the truth and not advertising our own results, resulting unwarranted hopes in many, many blind people.
The philosopher in me very, very greatly appreciates the effort of the Holy Father to recover a very basic notion of what scientific endeavor is. And I mean teleologically,
yeah.
That science is always in the service of human flourishing. And not to put too fine a point on it, you can't make people flourish by hurting them and killing them. But it does also give us an ethical yardstick, if you will, because even acceptable procedures and using ethically acceptable materials, adult stem cell lines. You know, there's nothing inherently immoral about using adult stem cell lines, for example. But the end of the specific project, the end of the specific project is what is going to qualify it as scientific or as sort of mad scientific. Do I have that clear? Is that right?
I think here the name of the game is to give the correct message to the public. What is science, what is wishful thinking, and what is science fiction? And the media is responsible for tempting scientists to oversell their results. And this is one part of the story. On the other hand, I think it's very important to understand the message of the Regensburg lecture. Namely, in a postmodern way of thinking, questioning the truth in itself, the Church and the Pope is becoming the pioneer, including John Paul II and in the Fides et Ratio and Pope Benedict in Regensburg lecture, that the precedence and the and the role of reason. It's an unprecedented, I think, unprecedented situation in history that these two popes are the pioneers in defending the right of reason.